We were in Ephesians chapter 4, and we were talking about putting off the old man and putting on the new. And I believe that little bit of theology is primary to everything we do, and certainly is primary to what we're going to talk about today. So we won't do a review of that. We'll do a review of that when we're back in our regular sequence through Ephesians. And today we're not going to be, I wish all of this was compact into one little scripture and we could just go through it verse by verse, and we're not going to jump around to a lot of verses. So I've listed just a list of verses there, that really contain the principles of what we're going to talk about this morning. And one of the main things we're going to talk about is leadership, that is required of men. And just as we did with the women, singleness or having children does not make one less or more feminine or masculine. And most of the duties of a man and the duties of a woman need to be carried out, whether there's children or whether there's a spouse. And it just becomes obviously much more personal when there's a spouse or when there are children. But I believe when we do these studies that these things apply, whether a person is married or whether they're not married, or whether they have children or whether they don't have children. Because we are made in a certain way. And those things are expressed maybe, like for instance, when there are children in the home, they're expressed in a certain way. The fatherhood or motherhood is expressed. Well, those things don't leave you when children leave the home. It's still who you are. And a person that's never had children or a person that's never had a spouse, that's who you are. As a man, you still have this desire to protect, to provide for, and especially when it comes to women and children. And we talked about this last time we had on Mother's Day, that, you know, that when the Titanic was going down and they were filling those boats, that was the natural thing to happen, that women and children got in the boats first. Was that because men are better swimmers and they survive better? No. Not in the least. That's because it's put into men. And when they have the courage that God intends them to have, then they will react and they'll do those things. If you're walking down the street and an attacker comes and you're a man and you're walking with a woman or some children, who steps up to take the blow? The man does. They don't have a little discussion on who's the most physically able, you know? Maybe the woman is a martial arts expert. And that's good. But still, that's some good backup. I know. But still, it's the man that goes and checks out that noise in the house. And if a man is laying there and he happens to be sick or he's paralyzed and he can't get up, that doesn't make him any less of a man. There's still the same drive in him to do that. It makes him no less if he can't express that in a certain way. And so the same holds true for married or not married, or having children or not having children. So it doesn't make the person any more masculine or any more feminine, their situation. The expression of it may change a bit. So that was one of the things, and I usually discuss that on Father's Day and Mother's Day. I think it's an important concept that we miss. That's why also, when we give out gifts for mothers or fathers, we give them to all the women, we give them to all the men. And that's the reason behind that. So men and women are different. You may not have noticed. They are different in a myriad of ways. And there is equality, biblical equality between the man and the woman, both made in the image of God, equal value and equal dignity. But God intends men and women to complement one another with weaknesses and strengths. And that's one of the things that makes a marriage and makes partnership in the church work. We should celebrate those differences, not try to diminish them or say they don't exist. And these are foundational principles from Genesis through Revelation. And I'm not going to have a specific verse for every characteristic that we talk about here. We'll do that some when we get to Ephesians. There's a whole section on marriage coming up in Ephesians chapter 5. And we'll do a verse by verse at that time. But for today, we're going to talk more about principles. These different roles for men and women that are described in the Bible are never traced back to the fall. You ever notice that? They're traced back to before the fall. You go through, and I have a list of verses there that talk about the roles of men and women. And it traces them back, not to the fall, but to the perfect setting with man and woman in the garden. The way, you see, cultural norms don't control what we're talking about this morning. It's design that controls. Now, the fall corrupted those roles, but the fall did not create them and make them. We are uniquely designed for partnership in ministry, men and women. And that's not, as I said, it's not just marriage and family, but it's throughout the body. And as we partner, though, we need to be aware that there are differences. You know, for example, our sin nature may take the unique leadership role. So the fall affected this. But the fall did not make, it was not the fall that caused men to be called out to be leaders in the family. But the fall affected this. For instance, the fall can turn around that call to leadership, and it can turn it into domination. Or it can turn it into rejecting the responsibility to lead, or it can be some perverted combination of passive and dominating. You see that in men sometimes, right? There's that perverted, perversion that we are passive, and then we're dominating, and we're overbearing, and then we don't do enough. We say too much, and then we don't say anything. That is the result of the fall. But we're called to lead, not to dominate, which would be a perversion of the fall. And that's really what we're going to focus on this morning is leadership. Now, there are a lot of things that we could focus on. We could focus on providing, and what does that mean? We could focus on protecting, and what does that mean? And we could focus particularly on raising children. There's so many different directions that we could go in here. But from Genesis, from before the fall, man was given a leadership role in the family, and later given a leadership role in the church. Now, this is not to say that women do not lead or that women do not have gifts of leadership. Certainly they do, and women are called to lead in a lot of different arenas. But that's not where we're going this morning. We're talking to the men. This morning, our focus will be that unique call of men to lead. So what is leadership? And when we talk about leadership in the family, usually I'll think, well, what exactly do we mean by that? And so there's no way we can't come close to a full explanation. So I'm going to give you some principles of leadership. And a lot of the application you'll have to make yourself. We're not going to turn this into a series. So this is going to be somewhat condensed. But let's go to a verse, I think a passage. And we're going to, like I said, we're going to cover this particular passage in detail in a few weeks. But for now, I'm just going to read it. And this contains a lot of the things that we're going to talk about this morning. So it's Ephesians 5:22. If you'll follow along. 22 through 6:4. It's kind of a long passage. We won't be reading a lot of verses today. But if you'll pay attention, I think a lot of these will come back to you as we're going through. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body, of which he is the Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery that I'm talking about, Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Part of a side note here is part of leadership in the home is to make sure that there is wisdom in the home. And particularly when decisions are made. When decisions are made, from the smallest decision to the biggest decision, there should be this thing, we should be asking questions. Men in particular should be asking these questions. Where will this take us? What path will this take us down? And often in Proverbs, which is the book of wisdom, like in Proverbs 4:26, it talks about our decisions taking us down different paths. And the path that we want to go down in our family and in our church is that we make decisions that will honor God. That is wisdom. You can boil it down. That's wisdom. Is that you look at the decisions you make and you think, is this decision going to honor God? Will this make us more effective in the kingdom or less effective in the kingdom? Is this a good example to the body and a good example to the world? This decision that we are about to make. Now, that's one of the duties of leadership, is to make sure that there is wisdom in the home. And I have a list here, and we're just going to go through this list of some very, these are very general principles. It's kind of what you could term it, a biblically masculine leadership. And these are just some of, not all of, some just to give us a little flavor when we say leadership in the home, what are we talking about? First of all, masculine, biblical masculine leadership in the home does not demand to be served, but in strength is willing to serve and to sacrifice, and absolutely not to be self-focused. Men in the home are to get the big picture, to understand where things are going, and to be willing to serve to see that happen. Leadership in the home is not out to be served, but to serve to accomplish a goal. In Ephesians 5 that we just read, right after it says the husband is the head of the wife, it says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. In other words, it was Christ the head serving the body that he might sanctify her. And leadership is not demanding, but it's moving things toward a goal. So, as a man in the home, and as leadership in the home, you should have a goal and know where your family is going. And so your leadership is to move the family in this goal. In this specific case in Ephesians, the goal was holiness or sanctification. What's that Ephesians 4:12? Is it we part of discipleship is conforming, helping others be conformed to the image of Christ. And that is a goal in the home, is that everyone be conformed to the image of Christ. And another goal in the home is the mission of Christ in the world. So, the man, as a leadership aspect, needs to move things towards a goal. And those are the goals we're just talking about. He needs to have the big picture. And biblical leadership does not assume the authority of Christ over a woman. Many people misunderstand this. There is authority in the home, but the man does not have the same authority as Christ. He is a representative of Jesus, and he is preparing his wife for Christ and leading her to depend more and more on Christ. Now, don't get me wrong. There is authority in the home. But the husband does not have all of the authority of Christ. He does not have that level of authority in the home. You'll understand this more, I think, as we go through. Biblical leadership does not presume superiority, but it mobilizes the strengths of others. In other words, it's not that because I'm the leader, I have to do everything the best and have to convince everybody that I do everything the best. The aim of leadership is not to demonstrate the superiority of the leader, but to bring out the strengths of the individuals and to move them toward the desired goal. Same thing in leadership of the church. The leaders in the church, they may not necessarily be the most talented, they may not be the smartest, but they should be able to help other people put their strengths to work and to move the whole thing towards the desired goal. So, with this in mind, a husband does not treat a wife like a child, nor a wife treat her husband like a father. The spiritual leadership of the husband should produce maturity, not immaturity, and it should not produce weakness and insecurity through excessive control or pickiness or oppressiveness. You see, those things produce weakness and insecurity. But we'll get to it. There is definite leadership and there is authority. There's responsibilities. Biblical leadership does not have to initiate every action that goes on towards the goal, but he feels with the responsibility to provide a pattern of initiative. Like having prayer in the home. Like the home being a ministry center. And we'll get into some more specifics about that later. So, and where men fail, a big area that men fail is they do not initiate things. They just let things roll rather than initiating. Why is half the people nodding like this? Biblical leadership accepts the burden of the final say, but does not use it in every instance. He will often adopt her ideas as his own, but team decision making should not go to the extreme of weakness and indecision. Both should agree. The husband's decision holds sway if it does not involve sin. See, that kind of clears out some of the smoke, you know. There's just disagreement on the decision. No decision can be reached. And the wife thinks this is just the better way to go because she just knows this is the better way to go. And the husband says, no, this is the better way to go. I know this is the better way to go. And if the wife cannot point to sin or something against biblical principles, which way do you go? The husband. You go the way of the husband. It can end a lot of conflict. It can make things go a little smoother on the way because you know that's where it's going to end up. As it gets to that kind of head wall, then the decision, the burden of the decision falls to the husband. That gives me no comfort, in case you're wondering. I don't think that gives most of the men in the room comfort. That the burden falls to us. So, there needs to be agreement to have a biblically based marriage. There needs to be agreement from the onset that that's the way that it's going to be. However, the husband will not often use that veto. He will not veto the desires of his family. And he will surrender his own personal preference where no moral issue is at stake. That is often the case and should be. He is fully aware of his own sin nature and inability to know what is best in every detail. But that does not change the fact that there is a scriptural principle that the husband will bear the burden of the final choice in a disagreement. Now that can't be the only aspect of leadership. A lot of people fall to that. Well, that's the only thing. You don't lead day by day. You don't have the big picture. You don't initiate ministry. You don't do all the things that need to be done. You're not engaged fully in what's going on. But then, when it comes to final decision, everybody knows you got to make. Well, it's not a one aspect leadership. It has to be a full-fledged leadership or it doesn't work. Now, as I'm going through these things, none of us are going to do this perfectly. I can guarantee you that. And even as I go through and study in detail, I want to leave some things out because I see my personal weakness of my example in these things. But so you ladies can help us grow in these things. We're not going to do these things perfectly. But you have a special position to help us, to encourage us when we do lead in the proper way and to show that kind of encouragement and respect that's necessary to be a happy leader. And it's much better to have a happy leader. The husband is to take the initiative in disciplining the children when both parents are present. I think that's a biblical way to do it. Not that the mother does not have full authority to discipline. She certainly does. And you don't have to say, and sometimes it may be appropriate to say, well, wait till your father comes home. But she does not have to say that. She has full authority to discipline on the spot immediately, and she should. But when both are present, I would advise that the man take leadership in disciplining the children. Take the lead in humility. That means repenting of sin and acknowledging wrong. To be an effective leader requires humility. To be a leader in a Christ-like way requires humility. Now, I feel like we could go on and on with this list, but I just want to give you a flavor of leadership in the home. So where are we leading? If we're leading, where are we going? So God did give Adam a job and a responsibility and the authority to carry it out. He gave Adam the instructions on the garden, and Adam was to pass that on to Eve. And he gave Adam a perfect helpmate to accomplish what he called Adam to do. Now, there are those that are called to do this job without a helpmate, so as to streamline, and he calls people to do this. And if anybody that's single at the moment, that's what you're called to at the moment. Whether that's a permanent calling or not, I don't know. But there are those that he calls to streamline and to put all of their energy and effort into the kingdom. But for Adam, he provided a perfect helpmate. And, you know, it would do us well in the relationship of the husband and the wife just to spend a little, you know, I didn't go into in-depth. I have in the past. I don't remember all the details on the word helpmate. I know that that word is used of God Himself at times. It's not a derogatory term in any sense. But if you think of what it means, this by the very name, it means that the man has been given oversight, task. These are the purposes of God. I hand these to you. You to the woman. You help him. These are your purposes too. But you help him accomplish those purposes. You see how confusing it is if the man is not taking on his task. And that brings chaos to the home if he refuses to take on the purpose and the task of God. The family has a mission, and the mission is identical to the church. The more this is true in action, in reality, in your home, the more powerful will be the relationship to the church and in ministry. When you really understand the purpose of the, and you know, I've always, when somebody talks about putting family first, or, oh, I don't put church above family, or they start talking about this kind of order of things, my always response is, you don't understand what you're talking about. You don't understand. That's not the relationship. The family is like a mini church, that is a building block of the church. The purposes are the same. You have more responsibility. Just as when men are called to be elders, they need to make sure they've taken care of their family. So yeah, your primary, your first responsibility is there, but it's not some kind of priority ranking. The purpose is the same. And when people say the family was ripped apart because the mother was going to church all the time, that's just that just doesn't compute for me. The family as a unit has the same purposes as in moving in the same direction and in partnership with the church. That's the way it is supposed to work. So, at what level is your family fulfilling the calling of God? You see, these details have to be worked out to be able to fulfill the calling of God. You have to have discipline in the home, and you have to have these things taken care of, and education, and all these things. But are you moving beyond that? In what level is your family fulfilling the purpose and the calling of God? Are you, the man, setting the pace and helping everyone, even if there's only one other person, are you helping them keep up? Does your leadership pull the family into ministry? And does your leadership encourage ministry? Our leadership in the home should have the effect of streamlining the home and the lives that are in the home for God's purposes. Not that you men have to do everything. There's not a chance of that happening. Or that you need to micromanage everything. But you must be engaged. Not managing and directing from your home base. But you must be engaged. It's like you're a part of the fleet that's headed on a mission. You're not back on some island. You're a part of the fleet and you're headed on a mission with the church, but you are moving somewhere. You're a part of it. You're not micromanaging it. Now, so it's the father's responsibility to make sure that the things that are going on in the home, the activities, are contributing to the purposes of God and not distracting. And the father's attitude is not, when you take on ministry, you don't ask, is this a burden or a sacrifice? That's not the right question. The right question is, does it contribute to the mission? Does this, what we are about and what we're doing, does it contribute to the mission? Even in the discipline of your children. Now, we don't discipline so that they won't embarrass us or bug us. We discipline so that they'll help them be conformed to the image of Christ. It's so critical to help develop those patterns of obedience. And to help each one, it also helps each one be able to contribute to the mission of the family. I'm just running down a list here, I know. You also have responsibility, men. If your wife is overloaded and stressed, then ministry is not going to be happening at your home. Because you will have a hard time convincing her to participate wholeheartedly in ministry if she's overworked, if she's stressed. So, as you help, and as you help make decisions that will not allow for distractions from our calling, a lot of times decisions are made to bring stress when they never needed to be made, and the husband could have been involved in that decision, because that decision and where you're going is going to distract from your calling. So, the husband needs to be engaged and involved and have oversight of the family. We are called to arrange and organize our families to have plenty left over for others. Just as we are to manage our finances to have left over for others, we are to manage our whole family to have plenty, both time and money and resources. Now, this rarely happens without men patiently and persistently having this mission in their mind and moving their family in that direction, even in the details. You see, to have things streamlined, to have things happen in a way that you have leftover resources for others, for ministry, that's what we're called to do as a family. Just like as a church, we're not just called to take care of each other. We have to outreach. And the family is the same thing. And I believe that's one of the qualifications of an elder. That needs to be happening in an elder's home to be, if he's going to have true ministry and initiate ministry. But, as I said before, men are notorious for this. For planning and thinking about ministering, and think that they do minister because they're thinking about ministering, but never initiating ministry. Men operate like that. They actually think about ministering. They plan, they think through these things. But it doesn't really happen because it's never initiated. It's never made to happen. We just wait for it to come to us, or we wait for our wives to make it happen in the area of ministry, or we're just not paying attention. We're not sober-minded. We're not alert for looking for ways that we can initiate ministry. Now, when you think ministry, you can think back to Ephesians 4:12 about helping others be conformed to the image of Christ. That can take a whole range of ministries, from counseling someone, from having a Bible study, from mowing somebody's grass, to sharing the gospel. So there's a whole range of ministries under that. To be sober-minded, alert. But here's a warning for you. When your life becomes and is moving towards being arranged for ministry, for service, the opportunities you get may end up being more than you're ready for. Because that's how God works. When you're ready and you move out in ministry, it may become more sacrificial than you bargained for. It's the nature of ministry. So, if comfort, safety, and security are your goals, ministry is not really going to happen. Men, it's safety, security, comfort, financial gain. That's your goal. That we are headed as a family. Then ministry is not where you're going to end up. It has to be a goal, and you have to be moving things in that direction. Obviously, for ministry opportunities, I mean, you know, we could, I'm not saying not to use discernment or to have caution. I'm not saying that. But if God called you to the mission field tomorrow, how long before you could leave? Are your affairs in order? Or do you owe your soul to the company store? God called you to the mission field tomorrow. Are you prepared? Are you prepared to be moving in that direction? He called you to another state, whatever. If God called you to be, maybe cut your income in half. Well, God does those sorts of things when we're ready. So that's, maybe that's motive to not be ready. I don't know. But hopefully your heart is in the ministry if you're sitting here. And as we move, there's so many things to think about as an overseer of your home, that things are moving in this direction. You have a goal. You have a mission. You have a purpose. You're even looking at the details, see how things can move in this direction. One thing is, what is the atmosphere of your home? You are responsible to be sure it is full of grace and it's service-oriented, not just towards each other, but towards the world. And by the way, a grace-based home requires the law, or grace will never be understood. If you're going to offer grace to each other, to your children, there needs to be a standard, you know, or grace means nothing. So there certainly has to be a standard. There has to be a rule. Or is there tension in your home and each person out for himself? Or is there just a lack of focus and direction? You know, busyness and idleness can both be the devil's workshop. And so who has to oversee that and get a balance there? Whatever the issue is, tension in the home, busyness or idleness or distraction, it may not be your fault, men. You may not be the cause of it, but you need to solve it. You need to solve it. You need to work on that issue. Get to the bottom of it. Now, I'm not going to say that you have the power to turn around a rebellious heart. You do not. But you can pray. You can do your job as a leader. And if a family is not on purpose moving in this direction from the day one, it really should be like this. But if it's not from day one, then maybe from today. If a family is not moving in this direction, you see, you're going to be on the wrong path. And you're not going to end up where God intends you to end up. And I'll tell you, you have to pay attention to these details. And men, you have to initiate things. You can't just roll with the flow and just let it go and let it happen. You have to initiate, take steps. If you don't know what steps to take, then get with an elder, get with somebody, discuss it. You know, another aspect of leaders is that leaders are connected to other leaders. To encourage, not to sit around and complain. Do not do that. But to encourage one another, to help one another in their weak area. Well, we're going to enter a new phase here pretty soon with the church. Are we not? We're about to enter a new phase. It will take us. I think it will take all of us. Especially you men. This is specifically a call to you men. To be willing to accept and to initiate ministry. It will not always fall in your lap. And of course, it includes your family. We're going to move to a new place. There are going to be new people coming in. If we want to maintain an atmosphere of family and relationships, that will be lost. And the work will, it'll just be another church on the map. If we are not willing to go into ministry. If we're not all willing to go into ministry. And there must be strong unity in this. That was a characteristic of the early church. That was one of the characteristics of the early church. Was their unity in the things that they were devoted to. Or, if we don't have unity and you connect to people, you'll just be drawing people to yourself. Our call is to build up the body, not our own personal kingdom. You can look in Ephesians 4, 12 through 16 and get a little clearer view of our call to build up the body. But if we're going to do this, we must be a Psalm 27 type of a leader. Let's go there now. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evil men advance against me to devour my flesh, my enemies and my foes attack me. They will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. The war break out against me, even when I am confident. Even will I be confident. One thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek. Here it is, right here. This needs to be our heart. That I may dwell in the house of the Lord. That doesn't mean that you dwell in a church building or the church meeting. That means that you dwell in the presence of God. That your desire is for God. That I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to seek Him in His temple. For in the day of trouble He will keep me safe in His dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of His tabernacle and set me high on a rock. Then my head will be exalted above my enemies who surround me. At His tabernacle will I sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Hear my voice when I call, O Lord. Be merciful to me and answer. And here's the other. My heart says of you, this is you, man, speaking to yourself. My heart says of you, seek His face. You have that voice inside you that says, seek the Lord. Put God first. Seek Him for all your worth. Then your response is, your face, Lord, I will seek. That if we do not make God our first love, our priority, putting on the new man and putting off the old, then we will never be able to do this. And if we try to do this without putting on the new man, all we will get is disrespect and hatred. If we try to accomplish these things in our own strength. And even when we do this in our own strength, we do it in God's strength, you will at times not be the most popular person in your home. That's part of being a shepherd. Do not be shocked. It's part of being a shepherd to get resistance. I'm sorry, ladies, but even the most godly woman, the most godly family, when God calls you to do something that's sacrificial and hard, men, you got to step up. You got to be the shepherd that you are called to be. And in loving tenderness, get your family on the right track. Serving God for all their worth. That is your goal. It should be your goal in your job. It should be your goal in your hobbies. It should be your goal in your everything you do. Is your family on that track? If they're not, it's you He has called to the front and called to task on it. It's you. If you refuse this leadership that you were called by God to and you were designed for, you'll not be the man that God has planned for you to become. This is God's very design for you. It's not easy. Who said it was easy being a man? It's not easy. That's why you're made the way you're made. It's why you have testosterone. It's why you have a little more muscle. It's why you have a little more grit. To be the man that God designed you to be. And to be the shepherd of your home. To be the spiritual leader. To make sure things are moving towards the goal. In gentleness and patience and loving kindness with Jesus as your example. Either we do this as a body, or we don't accomplish what God's called us to do. It's not going to happen, what God has called us to do, unless we respond and we take on real ministry, unless we men are doing our jobs. There's your challenge.